All right, strap in, everyone, because today we're diving headfirst into some seriously heavy philosophical waters. You wanted Aristotle. You wanted Metaphysics, Book 3. Well, you got it.
Yeah, we're going deep. Talk about, like, the nature of reality itself. How do we even know anything? And some seriously big questions about, you know, existence, the kind that might keep you up at night. Aristotle, even way back then, wasn't afraid to ask the tough stuff.
And honestly, Metaphysics, Book 3... it's dense. It's not exactly like, you know, beach reading.
That's where we come in. We're going to break it down. Like, what are the puzzles Aristotle's really trying to solve? Unpack his arguments and show you how these ideas, they still matter, even today.
Okay, so let's just jump right in. Aristotle kicks things off with this question that seems simple, but it's not. He asks, does investigating all the different kinds of causes, like, does that belong to just one science? Or do we need, like, a whole bunch of different areas of knowledge to really get it?
This gets to the core of what wisdom even is. Like, is there one ultimate science, one that explains everything?
Mm.
Or do we need different kinds of wisdom for, you know, different parts of reality?
Like, are you saying we need a wisdom of, I don't know, physics, and then a completely different wisdom for ethics, and another one for art, like separate wisdoms for everything?
Exactly. And to show what he means, he breaks down these different types of causes. Okay, think of a house.
Yeah, a house.
You've got the moving cause. That's the builder, the person who actually made it. Then there's the final cause. That's like the purpose of the house, why it exists at all, shelter, comfort, all that.
Okay, yeah.
Then you've got the material cause, the stuff it's made of, wood, brick, whatever. And then you have the formal cause. This is the blueprint, the design, the thing that gives the house its specific form.
Okay, I think I'm starting to see why this is so important. If you want to understand a house, like really understand it, you've got to look at all these causes, not just one.
Right. And that leads to a big question. Can we have, like, this one unified understanding of reality, one that includes all these different causes, all these areas of knowledge, or are we stuck with, like, this fragmented view of the world where each field just focuses on its own little piece of the puzzle?
That's a question we're still asking today, isn't it? Like, are we moving towards a more unified view of the universe where physics and biology and, I don't know, psychology all start to, like, come together, or are those fields just going to get even more specialized and separated from each other?
Totally. And just when you think you've got a handle on this, Aristotle throws in another curveball. He brings up things that don't change, like mathematical objects. And he says the idea of good as a cause, it doesn't really work for those things.
Wait, so math doesn't care about good or bad?
It's as if math operates by completely different rules than, you know, the world of physical things or human actions.
So are you saying that different areas of knowledge, they might need different ways of investigating them? Like, you wouldn't study a triangle the same way you'd study a society.
Yeah, exactly. It's like he's almost anticipating how science develops all these different disciplines, each one with its own tools, its own methods that are tailored to what it's studying.
Wow. Okay, so this isn't just like abstract philosophy. These questions about causes, about the limits of knowledge, they have real implications for how we approach, you know, understanding anything.
Right. And this leads Aristotle to probably one of the most fundamental problems there is, the problem of what he calls first principles.
First principle.
These are like the basic beliefs, the assumptions we use as the starting point for all our reasoning. They're like the bedrock we build everything else on top of.
Okay, but if these principles are like already how we think, how can we even study them? It's like studying how to breathe.
Right. That's exactly the challenge. Are these principles self-evident, so obvious they don't need any more proof? Or do we need to examine them further? And the stakes are high here. Because what if our starting point is wrong? What if we're building our understanding of the world on, like, shaky ground?
So he's asking us to think critically about the very foundation of what we think we know. How do we know for sure that the things we take for granted are even true?
And this leads him to maybe the most mind-blowing question of all. And that is, do only the things we can perceive with our senses, like, the stuff we can see and hear and touch, do only those things truly exist? Or is there a whole realm of reality that's beyond our immediate experience?
Okay, yeah, things are getting interesting now. I think this is where the forms come in, right?
It is. He's talking about these eternal, unchanging blueprints that exist outside the material world. Huh. We have, like, the form of beauty, the form of justice, even the form of a tree. Like, imagine the most perfect, idealized versions of everything we see in the world.
And these forms, they help explain how we can know things that go beyond just our senses.
Right. We'll dive more into the forms and what they mean in the next part of our deep dive. But for now, just think about what we've uncovered so far. Aristotle is already challenging us to think about, like, different kinds of causes, the limits of our knowledge, and what reality even is.
Yeah, it's amazing. These questions he is asking thousands of years ago, they're still so relevant today.
That's the power of philosophy, right? These big, enduring questions, they never really go away. They shape how we understand ourselves and the world around us.
Okay, so make sure to join us for the next part of this deep dive. We're going to see how Aristotle develops these ideas even further and how he tries to solve some of the philosophical puzzles he set up. Welcome back, everyone. So last time we were wrestling with all these big ideas from Aristotle, like different kinds of causes, the limits of what we can actually know, and those mind-bending forms, those like eternal blueprints that exist outside the regular world. Are we ready to go even deeper?
Yeah, Aristotle's not letting up. Remember those first principles we talked about? Those like fundamental beliefs that we use to reason about, well, anything. He takes a closer look at them in this book and asks, are those principles like broad categories, or are they the basic parts that make up a thing?
Okay, hold on. Can we break that down a bit? What does he even mean by broad categories versus basic parts? It's starting to sound a bit like, you know, philosophy Lego set here.
Okay, so imagine you're trying to figure out what a house is.
Okay, a house. Yeah.
So is it more fundamental to think about like the individual bricks, the roof tiles, the windows, all those parts? Or is it more about the overall concept of shelter, which is kind of a bigger category that covers, you know, all sorts of different structures?
Oh, I see. So like, are we looking at the individual trees or like stepping back to see the whole forest? Which one gives us the truer understanding of what a house is?
That's what he's getting at. Mm-hmm. And this goes to like the core of how we organize knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. Do we start with the tiny building blocks and build up? Or do we start with the big concept and then break it down?
Yeah. Okay, so this isn't just some, you know, philosophical game. This has, like, real implications for how we understand anything. Does this tie back to those different kinds of wisdom we were talking about before?
Totally. Because if those fundamental principles, if they're different depending on whether we're talking about parts or categories, well, that could mean there are, like, different ways to even approach knowledge itself.
Yeah.
Maybe different fields, like physics versus biology. Maybe they operate on completely different principles.
Whoa, okay. That's a pretty wild thought. But I'm feeling Aristotle doesn't stop there. What other philosophical twists does he throw at us?
Well, he goes on to ask this really tough question. He says, if the principles of all things are the same, why do some things, like decay and die, while other things seem like eternal and unchanging?
That's a great question. Like, why do some things seem to last forever while others just, you know, fade away?
Right. It's like asking why a flower wilts, but the idea of beauty, that doesn't.
Yeah.
And to make things even more complex, he brings in this other philosopher, this guy named Empedocles.
Empedocles. Okay.
Empedocles. He believed that like all of reality was governed by these two fundamental forces. Love, which brings things together, and strife, which tears them apart.
So it's like this cosmic dance between like connection and separation.
Yeah. And he thought this back and forth, this interplay, this is what explained why we see both unity and diversity in the world.
Okay, but does that actually answer why some things last and others don't?
Not really. Even if we like go with Empedocles' framework, it still doesn't totally explain why some things change and decay while others are just, you know, timeless. It's like asking if love and strife, if they apply the same way to a mountain versus a thought.
So even with those big cosmic forces, we're still left with this puzzle.
We are. But Aristotle, he doesn't stop there. He says the most important question, the most crucial one we can ask, is this. Are being and unity, are those just like attributes of things? Or are they the very substance of reality itself?
Hold on, whoa. Okay, we've gone from like flowers wilting to the fundamental nature of reality itself. I think we need to unpack this a little. What does he mean by being and unity being the substance of reality?
Okay, imagine a table, right?
Okay, table.
We can say the table. It is brown. It is made of wood. It is rectangular. All those are attributes of the table. But Aristotle's asking, is there something more fundamental than those? Something that makes the table be a table in the first place, like some core essence of being that everything else comes from?
So he's looking for like the ultimate building block of existence.
Right. And he ties this to unity. If being is that fundamental substance, then does that mean everything is like connected at the deepest level? Is there like one single source that everything comes from?
Whoa. Okay. That's a pretty pretty trippy thought, like imagining this giant cosmic web connecting, everything in the universe.
But Aristotle, he's not one to just throw out a big idea and leave it there. He's a philosopher. He's always questioning even his own ideas. And he points out there are problems with both sides of this. Like, if being is the only thing that truly I is, then how do we explain all the diversity, all the different things in the world? And if unity is absolute, then how can anything exist as an individual? Like, how can I exist if everything is ultimately just, one?
So it's back to that tension between unity and diversity, right? Like we saw with Empedocles and his love and strife idea. It seems like no matter how we look at it, we just run into more questions. Does Aristotle offer any kind of solution? Or does he just leave us hanging?
He does offer some ideas, but he's very careful about saying, here's the answer. He knows these are like some of the hardest questions people can ask. He actually uses the example of numbers to illustrate this whole substance problem.
Numbers. How do we get from being and unity to
Well,
numbers?
he uses them to show how hard it is to say what substance really is. He points out that a line, just a simple line, it seems more real than a physical body because it defines the body's boundaries. So then he asks, are abstract things like numbers, are they more fundamental than the physical stuff we see in the world?
That's interesting. It's like saying the lines on a map are more real than like the mountains and valleys they represent, which kind of connects back to the forms too, right? Those are abstract and eternal. Are they more real than the physical things they represent?
Exactly. He's always pushing us to think about how our abstract ideas connect to our, actual experiences in the world. And this whole debate about numbers, it's still going on today in math, in physics. Are numbers just tools, or do they point to something deeper about how reality works?
So we've gone from how long a flower lives to the nature of numbers and the whole mystery of what it means to be. Aristotle is taking us on quite a journey here, and I have a feeling those forms are going to make a comeback too. What else does he have for us?
You're right. Those forms are never too far away. And they come back in full force when he tackles this next level of complexity. Are the forms universal or are they individual?
Okay, now we're really getting into the weeds here. What does that even mean, universal versus individual forms?
Think of the concept of beauty.
Beauty. Okay.
Is there one single form of beauty that covers like all beautiful things, like one universal standard? Or are there many different forms of beauty, each one unique to a specific thing? Like, is there one blueprint for beauty that applies to everything? Or are there like as many blueprints as there are beautiful things?
That's a tough one. It feels like there should be something that all beautiful things share, right? Some essence of beauty. But then every beautiful thing is also unique in its own way. So how do those two ideas, how do they work together?
That's the challenge. How do we balance that unity of a universal form with all the diversity of, the individual things? He's trying to figure out how we can see beauty in a sunset, in a painting, in a piece of music, even though those are all so different.
It's like saying there's one perfect recipe for cake, but everyone bakes it a little differently. Some have chocolate, some have vanilla, some have sprinkles, but they're all still cakes.
Right.
Or are they?
That's a great point. How much variation can you have before it's not a cake anymore? And that's where Aristotle brings in another one of his key concepts, potency.
Potency. Okay, now I'm really lost. What is potency, philosophically speaking?
Think of it like this. Imagine a block of marble, just raw marble. That block has the potential to be a statue, but it's not a statue yet. That potential, it doesn't become real until a sculptor comes along and, shapes it. Aristotle's suggesting that reality might work kind of the same way, with like possibilities existing before they become real, actual
Wait,
things.
are you saying the universe could be full of like unrealized things, things that haven't even become real yet? It's like a cosmic waiting room.
You can think of it that way. It's this idea that reality isn't like static. It's always in motion, always becoming. Things are constantly moving from potential to actual.
Okay, my head is spinning. We've gone from flowers to numbers, the whole mystery of being, those puzzling forms, and now this potency idea. Aristotle's really putting our brains to work.
That's what's so great about him. He doesn't shy away from the big, difficult questions. And he's always making us think harder, Think deeper about ourselves, the world. And he's still got more to teach us.
Welcome back, everyone, for the final part of our deep dive into Aristotle's Metaphysics, Book 3. I gotta say, we've covered some seriously dense territory. Different types of causes, the whole being versus non-being thing, those forms. And just when I thought it couldn't get any more abstract, we got hit with potency. The idea that reality is like overflowing with possibilities that haven't even become real yet. My brain's feeling a bit like, I don't know, a philosophical pretzel right now.
Yeah, I know what you mean. We've been tackling some of the biggest, toughest questions humans have ever asked. But honestly, that's what makes Aristotle so fascinating, right? He doesn't hand us easy answers, but he gives us this like framework for thinking about these fundamental questions in ways we might not have considered before.
Okay, so let's try and bring some of this together. We've been talking about how Aristotle is searching for those like foundational principles of reality, the stuff that makes a thing be a thing. We've looked at causes, the limits of knowledge, even those forms existing out there beyond the material world. Where does all this lead? Like, what's the big takeaway from all of this?
Well, one of the key takeaways is that he's trying to build this like total system of knowledge, a way to understand the world that includes everything, from like the smallest particle to, I don't know, the laws in the universe. He wants to show how everything's connected, how all these different areas of knowledge relate to each other, and how we can move from just our basic sensory experiences to a deeper understanding of what's really going on beneath the surface.
So it's not just about like knowing a bunch of random facts. It's about understanding how those facts connect, the patterns, the principles that tie it all together.
Right. Aristotle's showing us that wisdom isn't just knowing a lot. It's about understanding how all that knowledge fits together, how it creates this bigger, coherent picture of the world.
Okay, that makes sense. It's like the difference between having a box full of puzzle pieces and, you know, actually putting the puzzle together. You might have all the pieces, but without seeing how they connect, you don't have the full picture.
Exactly. And another key takeaway is how much Aristotle emphasizes observation, logic, and careful analysis. He doesn't just like make grand pronouncements. He's always testing his ideas, looking at different viewpoints, refining his theories when he needs to.
Yeah, and what's really interesting to me is how much he focuses on that process of inquiry, like constantly questioning and pushing for a deeper understanding. It's like he's saying the search for knowledge, it's not about reaching some final destination, it's an ongoing journey.
Totally. And that's such an important lesson, especially today. We're just bombarded with information from all sides, right? It's more important than ever to like develop those critical thinking skills, to be able to, you know, look at evidence, make judgments based on reason, not just accepting whatever we see or hear.
Yeah, it's easy to just take things at face value. But Aristotle's reminding us that real knowledge, it takes work, engagement, being willing to like wrestle with complex stuff.
Absolutely. And honestly, one of the most fascinating things about Aristotle is even though he was writing like over 2,000 years ago, so many of his ideas are still relevant today.
I was thinking about that. Like, what would Aristotle think of modern science? Things like quantum physics or artificial intelligence. What kind of puzzles would those present to his, you know, philosophical system?
Oh, he'd have a field day. Can you imagine Aristotle trying to wrap his head around particles existing in like multiple states at the same time? Or the idea that we could create AI that's as smart as a human?
Yeah. It's like we've discovered this whole new level of reality that he couldn't have even like conceived of. What would he think of things like the metaverse or virtual reality? Would those be like extensions of the physical world to him or something completely different?
Those are great questions. It just shows how Aristotle's work isn't just about giving us a set of answers. It's about giving us the tools to think about new challenges, new discoveries. He gives us a way to approach the unknown, a way to grapple with, you know, the ever-expanding frontiers of human knowledge.
So even if he doesn't have all the answers, he gives us a way to ask the right questions.
Exactly. And that might be even more important. By encouraging us to think critically, challenge our own assumptions, and keep searching for a deeper understanding. He's helping us become like active participants in this ongoing quest for knowledge.
Okay, so what's the one thing you hope listeners will take away from this whole deep dive into Aristotle's metaphysics?
If I had to pick one thing, I'd say remember to embrace that process of inquiry. Don't be satisfied with easy answers. Always try to get a fuller, more nuanced understanding of the world. Aristotle shows us that pursuing knowledge, it's an adventure. It's full of surprises, challenges, and in the end, it's incredibly rewarding.
I love that. It's a reminder that learning isn't just about, you know, memorizing facts. It's about expanding our minds, deepening our understanding, and connecting with those big questions that people have been asking for, well, centuries.
And who knows, maybe some of our listeners will be inspired to like pick up metaphysics themselves and see what they discover.
That's a fantastic idea. We've really only scratched the surface here, and there's so much more to explore. So, to everyone listening, keep those philosophical wheels turning, and we'll catch you next time on another deep dive.